Welcome to the Drunk Guys Book Club, where books aren't just for school, where book clubs aren't just for women. Oh, and we're going to take a Mississippi of this beer.
I'm Mike.
I'm Nate.
I'm Jimmy.
And we are the Drunk Guys, and this week we are continuing our attempt, however percentage-hearted or fraction-hearted of the Booker long list, with James, a novel by Percival Everett. It looks like Nate wants to start with a beer.
I'm starting with a beer. Okay, so this book is about slavery. And then it actually gets into the Civil War, as you would think. It's actually about Huck Finn. But anyway, this beer is called The Union Between Us. Ooh. Because there is definitely a union between James and Huck Finn.
That sounds so
in
wrong.
The book. It sounds... There is a union, but yeah. not the way it sounds. Yeah, okay. So, The Union Between Us by Wild East. This is 4.6% alcohol, and this is a Fodor-aged New York lager. What's a New York lager? I don't know what that is.
It's got rat piss in it.
It's if you walk past it in the park, it reeks of pot. I don't think it has a distinct thing, like a real set of parameters.
It tastes like beer.
Well, that's New York for you. So, James...
What
is the newest novel for Percival Everett? We've read one of his books.
No,
a year
not
or two.
Your real name. Nice try, Jimmy.
It is.
He was nominated last year, right?
I think 2 years ago. Because he also is his book. Erasure was adapted into American fiction last year. Mm. He deals with the African American experience in the United States is a main theme in his work. He is older. Well, not old, old. He's 67. Okay. For some reason, I thought he was older than that. But we read The Trees by him a couple years ago. And this is very different. This is Huckleberry Finn from the perspective of, don't say it, Nate. We practiced this. Of Jim. The friend. Stop it.
So, okay. Now, this is a retelling of the book Huckleberry Finn, but it's actually it's different. So in a lot of the other retelling books we've done or that I've read, it follows the plot of the original perfectly. It's just kind of like what the other person was thinking while the main stuff happened. This is not like that. This is basically, what if Huck Finn was actually about Jim and not about Huck? And then some of the same things happen, mainly the beginning, and then entirely new things happen.
Because Jim's like missing from the plot of Huck Finn at times, right?
They get separated a few times.
Not just at times, but just like, it just changed everything.
Well, I think the parts that were in the book are kind of the same, though told from a different perspective. But then there are parts when they're separated, and then Jim just goes on some fucking crazy adventures in this, as opposed to in the Huck Finn book, where he's supposed to, we presume, just like stood there slack-jawed and waited to be found by the white child.
Yeah.
And it just goes to show you the power of one perspective. Oh, that's the name of this beer, is The Power of One, which is an IPA from Sand City that's 8.2% alcohol. And it's pretty good. Pretty good. To be fair, this is an IPA. It's a pale ale. I also balanced it out with a stout I'll have later to show that it is not segregated, the beers that I'm having. This one's very good, though. So it starts with Jim, the titular Jim, which is Jimmy's grinder name. And it is...
Ironically.
Yeah. He is on the... He's owned by, like, the Widow something or other. I forget her name.
The Widow Douglas or whatever?
Yes, the Widow Douglas, who is in the book, in the original book. She's the kind of adoptive, not mom, but just, like...
Guardian.
Person, guardian, raising Huck Finn, who is a just near-retarded ne'er-do-well. Like, he's just comically stupid in the book. And Jim has infinite patience with this kid because... He's a slave, and he can't afford to, you know, not have infinite patience with the white people around him. And there are a lot of passages with Jim talking to people. And he's doing the foghorn, leghorn kind of, you know, I don't really want to do it right now voice of, you know.
Yeah, we're not going to quote those
parts. I know. We already had to cut the part where Nate did it a minute ago. But we're going to, I mean, I didn't know that many verses to Old Man River, Nate. It was really unbelievable. And then he segued seamlessly into, you know, something about Moses, another Moses song. But the slave talk, the almost bordering on Amos and Andy type, like, mispronunciation, blackface kind of dialect. And then as soon as the white people go away, they speak pretty fine. They speak.
Yeah, this is like chapter two where Jim is talking to his wife and his daughter. And he's like, here's how you need to speak around the white people, and it explains how no, you can't say it like that because then you're giving them an order. And it was like, if your master like sets the house on fire by accident, you don't say, "What the fuck is wrong with you?" You say, "Do you want me to go get the fire extinguisher?" No, it wasn't a teacher, but it was like, you know, teaching his daughter how to code switch.
It's beyond just code switching, though.
Oh, yeah.
It's code switching is like saying you all instead of y'all. This is, you have to speak to the white people in a way that they always are reminded that they are superior and that they always think it's their idea and that they are correct. So even in the situation of like the house being on fire, you can't be like, "Hey, that fucking house is on fire." You have to be like, "What is burning?" I don't know. I'm too stupid to know. Then the master's going to be like, "Oh my God, it's my fucking house." Like, you have to make it, you have to be really over the top. Which I'm sure that kind of thing happened to some degree.
And this is going to come back a lot in the book, where people are going to go, where Jim is just going to like not bother to speak in the wrong way. And people are going to go, "What did you say?" Or like, "What's wrong with you?
Why are you talking like that?"
Many times. Okay, you've got two different things going on. You've got Huck Finn, who his father has come back to town. His father, who is the like alcoholic who beats him like horribly all the time. So you've got that going on. While at the same time, Jim's owner, I forget her name already,
Widow Douglas.
She has just, somebody gave her an offer to buy him, which is an extraordinary amount of money for the time. So she's probably just going to sell him. And he's like, "Well, I guess I just need to run away." And at the same time, Huck is like, "Well, my father's back. I need to just run away." So in Huck Finn, you get the perspective of Huck like slitting the throat of a pig and letting it bleed out and making it look like he was murdered so he could escape. But in this book, it's actually Jim running away, and then he runs away, and then he like, because they're in Missouri, they're along the Mississippi, and he goes into the river, and he like floats along the river. It goes to this big island, I forget the name of the island, but, and he's there, and then Huck shows up, and is like,
Jackson's Island,
there you go. And Huck shows up, he's like, "Hey, what are you doing here?" But at the same time, they're actually very friendly. In the very beginning of the book too, whereas Jim is like, "Yep, let me just help out this kid, even though, because he's just a dumb kid, but I like him." And so they're there on this island, and so that's when they're gonna like, they're on the island for a while, but then they're gonna try and escape together.
He's also very worried because Huck has just shown up and says that he faked his own murder, and he's like, "Well, I just ran away. They're going to think that I'm the one who killed you, so now I am double fucked."
Yeah, it's not going to take long for them to put rope and tree together and figure out who they're blaming for that. So he goes. Did you get the impression, though, Huck's innocent in a way? Like, he's dumb. He's really fucking stupid. And
he's a child. Was he 10?
Yeah, he's a kid. And Jim's, like, has no choice. But he kind of got the sense of, like, that's how, like, it was very common in this world, like the black mammies who are raising the children, and they just kind of accept, like, "Oh, that's just how it is." They're like inculcated in this incredibly, unfair world to not think anything of the black person as the helper, the person who's going to fix your shit, and they have no choice but to go along with it. It kind of felt like for the first half of the book, Jim is just like, yo, this is what I have to do. This is what I would do with any of these other white kids around, because if I don't, the punishment for me is dire. And those kids just grow up become you know, entitled asshole slave owners in some cases. Or worse, as we meet by the end of the book.
Yeah. He's also dreaming about talking with Voltaire and John Locke. And at one point, like, Huck wakes him up and he's like, you were talking in your sleep. And he goes, what's a hierarchy?
Well, because he's debating in his... He gets bit by a snake or something like that. And Jim's having a fever dream. Yeah. And in the there's a thing earlier where the widow is like, Jim, have you been in Judge whatever the fuck is... Judge Hawthorne? Is that his name? Judge whatever his name's library. And he's like, why would I go in a library? I don't know how to read. What's a book? And she's like, okay. But it turns out Jim has been in there and is very literate and has read everything and is super, super smart. And he's having these dreams debating with Voltaire and John Locke about the things they claim, which were inspirational to the American Revolution and the Constitution and all these things, and about equality and men being created equal and natural rights. And he's like, what the fuck are you, what the fuck, man? Like, Voltaire's like, yes, of course we're equal, but don't you understand that the Caribbean heat bakes your brain small? Like, he says something ridiculous, like, where you are raised makes you not as capable.
He was like, you know, you guys can be taught to be good, full humans, you're just not.
You're not going to do it on your own.
Yeah. It's like, oh, that's still bad to say.
But he's like, oh, I'm awfully pleased to hear that. Thank you, Mr. Voltaire. So all that's happening in the beginning.
And then after Jim gets bitten by a rattlesnake and then gets better, they get in a raft and sort of like raft down the Mississippi, just like an Huck Finn. And there's been a big rainstorm and a big flood, and they find a house floating down the river, and they go and like, oh, there's probably stuff in there we need, because they have nothing. And Jim goes in and he finds that, or James, it's not till the end of the book, and he's like, my name is James. No, maybe the middle.
Well, he calls himself James among other black people.
Yes. So James, he...
And in his inner monologue.
Goes into the house, like, Huck, there are dead people here, you need to leave, but doesn't tell Huck that one of the people is actually his father. Like, one of the dead people in the house is his father. Doesn't ask how they died. So like, oh, well, oh no. And then keeps that secret
Which in Huck Finn,
I think. That's
do
the
you
same.
Find it out at the end?
Yeah, Jim doesn't let Huck see.
Yeah, but like, it's revealed at the end. It's not. We don't get Jim's perspective at all in Huck Finn.
No.
Okay. No. I couldn't remember.
Yeah, and Jim doesn't tell Huck that's his father until the end of the book. Yeah. So that happens, and then they go to. And they go to another town. I don't remember the names. And then they meet the jester. No, what, the Duke?
The King and the Duke. Well, that's like later.
The
I mean,
King
they get
in the Duke.
It does, and the order of things is
much like Huck Finn. They just go on a bunch of adventures for a while.
Yeah. Also, they get separated once or twice. Where you get like in Huck Finn, you know, he goes to go to eat a bunch of pancakes or something, and then Jim reappears in the woods. Is like, I was just he's standing here, you know.
But witch sent me to New Orleans.
Yeah. That was what it fucking was.
Did you say eat pancakes?
I don't know. Made stuff up. But yeah, does that work with the beer?
It does. It does.
I'm sure that you got flapjack here.
It does enough. I mean, it's not great. But you would imagine for Jim, a pile of pancakes would have been a rare snack. Oh my God, I just got it in the throat. This beer is called Rare Snack. And it's the only stout I had. I was like, I'm going to make that work somewhere. Mm. And this is from Abomination Brewing. And this is, listen to this. A stout with Rocky Road ice cream, cookies and cream ice cream, chocolate lava cake, peanut butter swirl, cheesecake, pound cake, caramel, French toast, whipped cream, pecans, and vanilla beans. And it's 16% alcohol.
You're going to have some weird shits.
I'm not going to have toes. I know.
Does that fit out through the little hole in the can?
I mean, I think they pureed the cheesecake before they put it in.
Does that can weigh 8 pounds?
I feel like my hand does now from the swelling, just from taking one sip of this. I mean, it's
Can you taste all the individual cakes?
I don't get all of those things.
You don't get Rocky Road ice cream and pound cake at the same time.
No, and I'm really not detecting many notes of chocolate lava cake. But it does taste like diabetes. It is pure sugar and chocolate brown, which is what the ladies call Jim.
But Kentucky Hot Brown?
Is that a thing? What's a Kentucky Hot Brown? Is that
Kentucky
a sex
Hot
thing?
Brown is like a... Oh, what the fuck is it? It's like gravy on something. Oh, what the fuck? It's a thing where you poop on your partner's chest.
Oh, I thought that was something else.
Kentucky Hot Brown. It's a hot sandwich.
Pocket. Oh, okay. So that's when you shit on somebody's chest and then you sit on it. So it's like you were the bread.
It's open-faced warm sandwiches, roast turkey, lightly charred tomatoes, creamy Mornay sauce, crisp bacon, and melted cheese.
I say that sounds fucking awesome.
It sounds decadent.
That sounds like something you get from Cheesecake Factory, which cheesecake is in this beer. So we'll get back to the plot.
So no, I mean, the first thing that separated is the first thing separated when he ends up in the minstrel show.
No, that's the second.
That's when
they meet the king and the duke first.
What's the first time they get separated?
So they meet the king and the duke, who, among other things, have this plan where they're going to sell Jim, but then have Jim escape so that they can go down to a new town, sell Jim, and have him escape, and so they can just like keep getting money that way.
The old revolving door slave trick.
And now that they describe it, I'm like, why didn't everyone do that? I mean, I feel like this must have been a common thing. This had to have been kind of a common thing that happened. So anyway, but the king and the duke, they get themselves in trouble because they're like, they're thespians and they're like perform a play. But one of them does the speech from...
Merchant of Venice.
Yeah.
And everyone's like...
From Shylock. He literally does Shylock's speech. And the people in the town are like... You're a Jew? And they run them out of town.
Aren't they at like a church, or like a revival speech. Preacher meeting or something like that?
They yeah, interrupt a revival and then they start out preaching the guy. And he's like, look at my here slave. He doesn't use that word. He's from Borneo and he was gnawing on a bone and the spirit of Jesus saved him. And then all of a sudden people start to get a whiff of it being bullshit. And the guy's like... He don't look like anybody from Borneo. I was like, how the fuck do you know? You live in Missouri in 1860. You don't know anything. And the guy was like, good point. But then the preacher gets mad. They piss off everybody instantly because they're fucking asshole con artists who aren't very good at it. They're only good at conning Huck because he's fucking stupid. That when the guy gives his speech, he's like, I am the Dauphin.
And James has to go along with it. Because they'll just kill him.
Yeah. But Huck buys it. Huck, you know, Huck, line, and sinker.
Uh-huh.
All right, so after Nate, they leave. That's their word, Nate. No, we can't keep cutting it out. I'm sorry, go on.
So then they get run out of town, and so they all have to leave. And then they find the guys doing the minstrel show.
They do the scam. They try to do a scam, and then one of the goons, the Dauphin or the Bridgewater or Bilgewater, whips somebody else's slave because that's what you could do apparently. And then the owner's like, "What the fuck, man? Now my slave can't make horseshoes. You have to give me your slave." And they're like, "Oh yeah, schoolyard rules." And so then they leave Jim, and then the guy, you know, he's making Jim work to work off his owner's debt, and he's making him sing as he works as a blacksmith, and he makes him sing songs, and then the minstrel guys walk by and like, what is that beautiful sound I hear? I always cut you off, Nate, but like, it's a ridiculous scene. What an arrangement of, it's like a Guy Ritchie movie. Like how many, all these things line up. And then the minstrel guy buys Jim. And the owner's like, well, no backseas on slaves. And then he sells Jim for like the third time he's been sold already in the book.
$200. But now he's in a really weird position. Now Jim is in a really weird situation in that he has to sing in a minstrel show. But a minstrel show is white people putting on blackface. But yet Jim, and one of the other guys in the show is actually a person who is black but can pass for a white, so everybody thinks that they're white, but he thinks that this guy's white. I forget his name. And then he's going to be important later.
Norman?
Like that. But anyway, but they have this thing where they need to like put makeup on Jim to make it look like he's actually a white person in blackface.
Wasn't this the plot of Bamboozled? Jimmy would have seen this movie.
I don't know what that is.
I think it's a Spike Lee movie where it's black guys pretending to be white doing a minstrel show.
I believe it.
Bamboozled. 2000. Oh my God, I got every detail right. 2000. American satirical African-American comedy drama film written and directed by Spike Lee about a modern televised minstrel show featuring black actors donning blackface makeup.
That was Savion Glover. That's weird.
Is he related to Daniel?
No, he's a tap dancer.
You would want one of those in a minstrel show.
Oh, and Damon Wayans. Yeah. My God, Major Payne?
Yes. Yeah. Blank Man.
Oh, that's like the whole movie does that.
So Jim, he's in this minstrel show and he has to pretend to be white, but they're like, if someone talks to you, don't talk. But at the same time, Jim doesn't actually talk like a slave. He only talks like a slave when he's acting like a slave in order to pretend the white people. But he's got this, this is a really kind of really funny situation where he's like, pretending he's black, pretending to be white, pretending to be black. And so, but he can't like talk to people in a normal way because then people would be like, some people who know he's black would be like, why are you speaking that way? But he can't speak to them in a way that a slave would speak to them because then it'd be like, you're white. Why would you speak like that? So he can't do anything. And so they do the minstrel show and they're like, he doesn't even learn the songs. They're like, you'll learn it as we go. Cause it's really just kind of like call and response stuff.
And they're the classics like Turkey in the Straw and shit and Jump Jim Crow. And the guy is writing other songs. And I didn't bother to look up if it was a real one, but I bet it was, and it was not very different from something like Ozzy Eats a Watermelon, just singing that. Yeah. And he's like, what the fuck is this shit? And he's like, that's what the white guy thinks black people sing like. And you're like, whatever, man.
And the audience, which is entirely white, thinks it's hilarious. And then at the end of the show, they're all talking to the people after talking to all the white people after the show. And like, yeah, blah, blah, blah. And a white woman is like, oh, goes up to Jim and is like, oh, she's really into him. And they go to her father or something like that?
She's flirting hard. And yeah. The dad comes to break it up. Who is Colonel Sanders? If the description of him, he's wearing a white suit and he's got a white beard and white hair and like a string tie. His fucking Colonel Sanders shows up and cock blocks it.
Of course, Jim is terrified because he's like, I need to like not speak. And she's like, oh, and she's very, very into him. She like touches his hair or somebody does. The dad does. And he's like, oh, that's
the best wig I've ever felt.
This is after the dad says, I could smell an N-word 30 miles away.
Yeah.
he's like, feel your hair. Oh my God, what is this made out of?
And the other guy in the minstrel show is like, oh, it's our best wig.
We can only afford the one.
It was only the one, and it just happened to fit this guy the best. So he's wearing it.
That was probably believable in 1860.
Yeah.
There was no Temu to buy dumb cheap shit like that.
So Jim knows like, oh, nobody's going to believe this. This is not going to work at all. And so he kind of like leaves. But he decides he's going to run away. But one of the other guys in Minstrel Show is going to run away with him. His name is Norman. Is that him?
Yeah, but you can't skip when he wakes up with Colonel Sanders feeling his head again.
Oh, yeah, he sneaks into the guy's tent.
I just had to feel that wig again. That's the best wig I ever felt.
And then he's the runner, the boss of the minstrel show is like, I'm going to tell everyone you're gay if you don't get out of here.
Oh, yeah. Because of the implication.
The implication. Yeah.
The implication. You know,
the implication.
See, I'm going to tell people you're touching men's heads while they sleep. He's like, why would you? Because of the implication.
Which head?
And he's like, no, don't do that.
And this is when the guy leaves, and the guy running the show is like, you know, you're happy to have you here, man. And is like, James is like, hey, you know, I know you don't really believe in slavery, but like, so I could just like leave? And the guy's like, well, I did pay $200 for you. So not really. He's like, well, what's up with that? And he's like, well, let's just say you owe me, you're going to work it off and you get paid $1 a show. It's like, so 200 days? It's like 200 shows. So then you'd be free, I guess. It's like, yeah, so I don't really believe in slavery, but you're still a slave right now for me.
He believes in indentured servitude.
Yes, very
that's,
different.
That's textbook indentured servitude.
So he decides to run away with one of the other guys because the other guy is actually black and a runaway slave, but he's light-skinned enough that he can pass for white, so everybody actually thinks he's white. So they run away, but they're going to then pull the scam where the guy who can pass for white is going to sell Jim to somebody, and then Jim is going to escape, and they're just going to keep the money. That's like, because this whole time Jim is like, I need to get back and, you know, buy my wife and daughter, which is really what he wants to do this whole time. And this whole part of this large part of the book, Huck Finn is just not in. He's just like not there at all. So he goes and they go down the river, go to a new town, and then they sell Jim to a lumber yard, I think. They go to the lumber yard, and Jim's there for like a day, but then he gets whipped on like this first day.
Well, they find, you know, one of the themes is like there are quote good owners and bad owners, and he gets sold to a bad owner who's like, oh, he's gonna whip you the first bunch of days until he's convinced that you are, you know, obedient. And so the first time Jim says anything, like, he's like, did you do this? And he's like, I've tried. He's like, well, come over here for your whippings. And then they whip him to sleep. When he wakes up. And there's also I forgot his name. It was like Lyle, something with an L, was the slave who was clearly, did you see Django Unchained? Did you see that movie, Nate?
Nope.
But Samuel L. Jackson's character, where he's like the old house slave who likes being in his position of power, so he snitches out the other slaves to get better treatment by the master. He's a disgusting character. If you watch Django Unchained, he's horrible. It's apparently Samuel Jackson, when he read the script that Quentin Tarantino wrote, he's like, I want you to be this guy. He's like, it's fucking, black people are gonna hate me for being this guy. Like, this is fucking awful. This is like, oh my god. That slave is on this plantation. He's like, oh, yeah, he can whip you now. He's like enjoying it as much as the master to see someone else. You know, it's like the kind of thing when you're low down, you like seeing someone lower than you. So Jim gets whipped. He wakes up and he's like, oh, fuck this shit.
Is this where he has that other guy steal a pencil and then they kill that guy?
Oh, we passed all that. Oh, yeah. That was brutal. Yeah.
Earlier they were on the river, or they meet some other enslaved people, and Jim is like, does anybody have a pencil? Like, I want to like write some stuff down, because he has a journal with him and he occasionally is trying to write stuff.
Because he found a whole bunch of books also
about
at some
the Enlightenment.
Point.
He gets that in the house with the the dead dad.
Yeah.
And one of the other slaves like steals a pencil for him, and it's like, oh yeah, no, the master dropped it and I just put it in my pocket, and then I helped him look for it, even though I actually had it the whole time. And he's like, oh, here it is, you know, because you're the one that can write. And then 20 pages later, it's like, did you hear about the
Well, Jim sees that guy getting whipped publicly.
Oh, yeah.
And the guy makes eye contact with him and he says, run. And then he hears later on
he died.
They lynched him.
Yeah, they lynched him for stealing a pencil. And Jim has the pencil. Meanwhile, he's back. So he runs away from the lumberyard and he takes a girl with him who has been whipped, not only whipped, but also is like, oh, he rapes me every night. So she takes, he takes her with her.
She's
like,
a kid. Okay, she's like 14.
She says, they say I'm 15. He's like, ew. Well, he doesn't even know she's a girl at first because of her clothing and whatever. It's only when she shows the whip scars or something. He's like, I saw her breasts come out. He's like, you're a girl. I was like, I never said I wasn't. He's like, oh, fuck. My daughter's almost your age. I know what happens. Let's go. They get to the place where they're supposed to meet Norman, their rendezvous point. And, you know, there's some confusion because she's there and who's like, who the fuck is this lady? And they get on the boat to go. But of course, now the slave owner guy, oh, I forgot his fucking name, he's come with the dogs and they're shooting. And he's like, get back over here. And Jim makes a wise observation. He's like, why the fuck would they shoot us? Like, you can't work for anybody if you're dead. Because it didn't matter. Point of the book is it's all about power. And they shoot and they're on like riding logs. It's like the fuck. It's like, it reminded me of that scene in The Hobbit when they're in the barrels and they're just floating around trying to figure out what's going on. And then when they get to the beach, they realize that the girl is not responding because she got shot through the chest or the back or something. And she died. And so they have to bury her there.
So, eventually Jim and Huck stumble into one another again.
Jim and Norman, they get back on a raft and they like find a riverboat in the dark and they like climb onto the riverboat, but then climb into the engine room of the riverboat. And so they're on the riverboat in the engine room. They're like, well, hide, we need to hide in here. But then the guy who runs the engine room, which is a slave who just goes in there to like shovel coal, it's like, who the hell are you? And so the guy who passes as white is like, oh, this is my slave. We just got lost. And then, but Jim is being like, shut the fuck up. What are you talking about? Mm-hmm. And he's like, how does he speak to you like that? And so the slave immediately, the guy who runs the engine room, he immediately is like, this is weird. And then Norman goes, they find luggage and he like goes upstairs and then he comes back down. And he says, there's a war on, there's a civil war and it's about slavery. He's like, oh, but Jim is like, I really don't care. It's not going to be that great. And then somehow the boat blows up.
So part of it is that the guy, the slave who's working in the engine room, Jim's trying to understand the process because at the point when the quote-unquote master leaves, the guy's like, well, you here, you're going to work. Here's what you do. You shovel coal. If you hear one bell, you shovel this. If you hear two bells. And it becomes obvious that the slave who works on there like never leaves the engine room. He's been there for so long. He doesn't know anything else. And he's kind of like broken. And Jim realized, I don't think there's even a fucking master anymore. Like that guy he never sees the master. He's just been part of this like machine, you know? And all of a sudden they hear a bunch of bells and the guy's like, just shovel all the fucking coal in, I guess. And then the ship explodes. There's a giant fire and it just explodes.
The whole thing explodes. And then there's like, you know, people are like dead in the water. And Jim is like swimming around or he's like floating around. And he sees like he sees Norman saying, help me, I'm drowning, I can't swim. And then he sees Huck Finn, who was actually on the boat too. It's like, help me, I can't swim. And so he has to pick one of them.
Jim's choice.
Mm-hmm. And then, so he picks Huck. So he goes and swims over to Huck Finn and then like drags him out of the water and saves him. But then when he brings him up on the water, brings him up on the land and Huck Finn is like better. He's like, oh, by the way, I'm your father.
No, Jim, Huck, I am your father.
Basically, yes, that is the union between us by Wild East. That was it right there.
And it also shows the power of one horny night.
And it's like, yes, I am your father. Your mother and I were friends.
Biblically. You know what
happened.
It has been said earlier in the book that Jim is light-skinned, which would explain why Huck is, you know, nobody even questions who he was.
I didn't understand that this was like, I'm literally your father. It was like a metaphor, like, you're like a son to me. Is he saying he's literally his father?
That's what I got. So. Yeah.
Oh. I thought it was like a, you know, like, your dad was shit, but like, I've been there your whole life. I'm your father. You're a son to me. But
no, I think he meant it, man.
Yeah, I think he meant it. I think he meant the reason why your like other father beat you is because he thought maybe you weren't his.
He was trying to name you Cuckleberry, but he was so drunk he said it wrong. You know, Cuckleberry Finn. No? Come on.
Could be.
I thought this is when the book fucking jumped 11 sharks.
Yeah.
Well, I didn't even know it did that.
That was ridiculous.
Because it was like everything else had been foreshadowed, right? Now, like, have you been in the books, Jim? And he's like, I'm talking to Voltaire. I must sleep. And then all of a sudden, he's like, this kid's annoying. And then later, I was like, I am your daddy. Like, it was just absurd. It came out of nowhere and it served no purpose. Could have just been, Jim could have said anything. They could have made a one sentence throwaway. Huckleberry reminded me of my brother that got sold. Huckleberry, you know, it could have been anything, but to be like, oh, actually, because earlier on, there is a part where one of the slaves or the guy who's passing or something like that, I forget who, says, does that boy know who he is? And Jim's like, I don't know, who knows? As if, you know, they have a, whatever the black version of Gaydar is, but it just came out of nowhere and was really unnecessary once it was there. So it was, he tells him this, and Huck is like, oh, he immediately is like, Oz knows. He's like, he starts talking like that. And he's like, what the fuck are you doing, kid? You don't have to do that. Everyone thinks you're white. Just play it cool. He's like, I don't know, man, my papas. And he's like, oh, shut you, God, you really are stupid. And then it never matters again. And then it never fucking matters again in the book.
That is true.
But that's like literally the halfway point of the book.
I feel like I was better off thinking it was a metaphor.
I think it was real. I think it was
I looked it up just now. I was like, did I just fucking just totally fuck that up? And I did, yeah. It actually, yeah. It says he's a biological son. It's like, man, I just assumed, like, I guess it was so absurd that it was like, he must mean metaphorically, but no, he didn't. Okay.
Now, it could be that it's the sort of thing of Percival Everett trying to say, look at how, you know, how fucked up this system was, how people just assumed you were one thing or the other based, but like, we...
Well, they also, like, implied earlier on that James's father was white.
Oh, so. Yeah. Yeah. There's a lot of examples of slave or master-slave rape in the book.
They just kind of including the whole end.
Oh, yeah, it gets there. You like, the foreshadowing it's like eight shadowing. It's like there's a lot of it. So, sorry, what happens next, Nate?
So Jim and Huck go back to Hannibal, Missouri, and where they, because Jim wants to find his kids, his wife and his daughter. So they go back, and Jim and Huck is going to like, oh, I'm not dead after all. See? Ha-ha. So they get there, and Jim goes to his, like, he's still, like, sneaking in. He doesn't tell everybody, yeah, I'm here. But he goes to his house, his little slave shack where he lived before, and there's a new family living there. And so he's like, what, who are you? Where, and it's like, oh, they were sold.
And he sends Huck to find out the details, which Huck completely fucking fails to do because he's useless.
Well, he finds a detail.
They were sold, Jim. Oh, thanks, Huck. Got there myself.
So he's like, talks to them, but then he has to hide when the slave master rapes the woman.
Oh, the overseer, Hopkins.
Overseer, yeah. Overseer rapes the woman. It's like, oh. And then so Jim goes back to Jackson's Island and like waits there. And he's like, Huck's going to know to find me here. So he waits there and he waits for like days and days. And then Huck finally shows up and says, I couldn't get away, I swear. And they didn't believe me that I wasn't dead. But they finally did. But I finally got away. And I found out that your wife and daughter were sold to the Johnson Farm? I don't think that's the right name, but...
Grand Farm?
Like that, yeah. Grand Farm. I don't know where that is, but that's where they are. Okay, I gotta go, because I escaped from church, and I gotta get back. And Jim is like, yeah, okay. You should leave so they don't come looking for me. And then 2 days later, the slave master, slave...
The overseer is what
overseer,
they call
slave overseer, it shows up on the island... Incredibly drunk, I guess, as you do.
It's a drinking and hanging out spot for the dudes in town.
Yeah. And he's just like passed out drunk there. And Jim just like finds him and takes his gun and then murders him. But he's like, he has this whole thing. So this is the part, much like in the trees, where Jim gets revenge. So he kills the overseer. And he's like, yeah, this, and he like talks to him and he's like, yeah, it's because of fear. That's what you liked about the rape. So this is what I'm doing to you. And he murders him and like takes his gun. And then he goes to Judge, whatever his name's house.
Hawthorne, but I could be making
Hawthorne. That's fine. Yep. It's Judge Hawthorne's house. And is like, where is my family? And the judge is like, they're over here in this town. Okay. You need to show me on the map. And the judge is like, you can read? And why are you speaking to me like that? It's like, get out, come with me. And so they get in a boat, makes the judge row the boat. And he's like, we see what it's like being a slave. And he's like, I'm not a slave. Well, are you doing this because you feel like it or because you're being paid? No. Well, I guess you're a slave. And so, but he doesn't kill the judge. He just like ties him to a tree and then leaves. And then he finds the farm where his family, where his wife and daughter are, and they're and it's like, oh, that's a breeding plantation.
I had a question about that. Obviously it happened.
It was a thing.
But was it a thing? At least I'm not trying to pretend like the Holocaust didn't happen right now. But like, was it a thing that there were plantations and that was their product, was slaves? Because that's how they make it seem. That they have the biggest, like big burliest factory. Men, and they're just breeding women and selling the children, almost like horse breeding. I mean, I think this might have been an example in the book of
symbolism. There were slaves that were used as breeders.
Oh, sure,
but
yeah.
I don't know the specifics of like, was this particular location just for breeding?
Particular enterprise like? I mean, I feel like the slavery that was practiced was about agriculture, and children could be sold off. You know, as horrifying as that
it
is,
it may have become a thing after they outlawed importing more slaves.
All right, I just never heard of such a thing. I don't know, because this guy's the other book was so over the top that I don't know if he's really trying to just like really exaggerate, but just look at how crazy. The logical extremes of slavery are.
I think it's
an honest question. I'm not trying to say it didn't happen. I'm really asking.
I think it's likely. I think it's unlikely that the place was just for breeding. They probably still worked them in the fields as they did any other place, and also they did a lot of selling of children because they're there anyway.
And yeah, and what uses the child, right?
Yeah, I mean, when he said it's a breeding plantation, he didn't necessarily mean like that's all they do there. He's saying like they're known for also selling off a lot of kids because like I was like I can make them do that. Fuck them.
That's what he meant. Fuck them. Yeah. I mean, it's a horrifying concept, but then he finds there four dudes, and he's like, they're the fucking biggest dudes I've ever seen. Like he's found like you know. Four linebacker-sized men chained to a post. And they're like, he's like, what the fuck are you chained here for? And he's like, well, it's because it makes them feel better and it makes us feel like animals. You know, it just was everything else is so direct that I was like, the breeder thing struck me as interesting.
And then Jim is like, okay, they're over here. My wife and daughter are over here, so we're gonna break them out. And everybody, we're all escaping all together. They like set the house on fire, and it's like everybody leave. And then the slave owner comes out, and he's like, "Put that fire out!" And when he sees all the slaves, instead of putting the fire out, are running away, that's when he actually starts shooting them. But everybody leaves. Everybody like runs into the forest, runs into the woods.
Jim kills that guy.
Oh, that too. Yep. And then this is where Jim
someone
gets
had to
revenge.
Teach him how to use the gun, and then he uses it on him.
Mm-hmm. This is where Jim gets revenge, and then he escapes. And it's like, we're not all going to make it. Some of us won't, but we weren't free before. We were. Multiple times has come up in the book where it's like, were we alive before? So what risk are we taking by escaping? And so they escape.
Right.
And they make it to Iowa.
Man, last time we did Huckleberry Finn, one of our patrons said it was embarrassing how little Mike knew about geography. I had fucking no idea Iowa was this close.
It's like right in the fucking middle.
I had no idea. I mean, I really thought Missouri was much further south and Iowa was much more west. I had never really. They don't teach us that on the coast.
We think of Missouri as the south, but it was literally the compromise. So it's like,
it's the south of the Midwest.
Yeah, but it's still not like the south of America, I guess.
It was a slave state that stayed in the Union.
Was Kentucky the other one that did that? There were a couple, right?
West Virginia.
And they,
that was different.
Often ignored North Virginia.
Shortly.
I know somebody wrote on our Goodreads, which we have one of those. You should check it out. The low point of their career as teaching geography was hearing Mike try to figure out where Missouri was. And I felt terrible shame ever since. And then I also, because I think that guy lives in Missouri, I was like, oh, fuck that state. I don't care. But yeah, so they're like, I mean, they're going through wormholes where they're going south and getting into Illinois. I don't know how that happens. And then they go somewhere. They somehow also get to Iowa. It's like a torus. What's that shape?
Like a torus sailing is around a one of those three-dimensional donut shape.
I think all donuts are three. I mean, a two-dimensional donut sounds deeply unsatisfying.
No, a torus is just a donut.
Yeah. So anyway, they escape. They take the burliest dudes he's ever seen, and his wife and daughter, and they run north. And then what happens?
Then it's the end. Same. They make it to Iowa.
But like, it ends. Yeah. And the guy's like, where are you runaways? Like, it's the fucking Civil War is in action. And the guy's, and he's like, we are. Yeah. And what are your names? Is one of you a runaway by the name of unpronounceable word Jim? And he goes, well, that there is Buck. And that's, you know, Hingle or whatever the fuck their name was. I can't remember. And that's Sadie. And I'm James. And the guy's like, I can't crack that mystery. End of book. But like, he takes ownership of himself. Like, that's got to be... Come on, for the kid who has a paper due tomorrow, we have to say that.
Well, I mean, the whole thing is true. Yeah. Saying, I'm not Jim, I'm James. It's the whole book.
I'm starting to get the sense that Percival Everett is not subtle. He wants you to know it, which I appreciate, because I'm sure there are 15,000 more things we missed.
Yeah, but I think we got the gist. Definitely not subtle. At least it had an ending, unlike the trees, which is like, oh, I forgot to write the second half of this book.
Unlike racism, Jimmy.
This book had definitely some similarities with the trees. I've never read that other book, the one that was made into American fiction. Have not
Erasure.
Erasure,
which is basically the movie, but I've never saw the movie either or read the book.
I was going to ask if anybody saw it. Yeah.
I did not.
I heard it was pretty good. I wanted to see it.
It looked good. Yeah. I haven't just gotten around to it.
Jeffrey Wright can do no wrong.
But.
Ooh. Well done.
I didn't even think about that. But yes, I stick with it.
That's how true it is.
My feeling is Percival Everett, when he comes up with a concept for a book where it's like, oh, I'm going to do Huck Finn I'm going to do Huck Finn from Jim's perspective. It's like, great, chapter one. And then doesn't know what to do. Or not doesn't know what to do. That's not the wrong way to say it. More like at the beginning of the book, it tracked what happens in Huck Finn, the book, you know, in Mark Twain's Huck Finn pretty closely. But then he kind of ran out of steam and then came up with all these things that don't match that anymore, which is fine. It's like, great, sure. He did went in an entirely different direction. But, and with the trees, I felt like the concept of, oh yeah, we're murdering the people who murdered Emmett Till is a great concept, but then didn't know where to go with it. And in this book, he knew a little bit more to go with it, but then he decided to just kind of like get, have the main character get revenge, and then like, I guess they escape. It had more of an ending, but yet, did it stick the landing? Like, not exactly.
I think it did.
Stuck more landing than the trees.
The trees never even jumped.
And so, yeah, it had more of an ending for sure. But yet, I mean, and Jim gets to, I guess, so gets to a free state, gets to Iowa and says, and who, what's your name? It's like, I'm James. It's like, okay, that's all right. But was it a complete ending? I kind of think.
I think the ending is perfectly reasonable. I mean, they escape.
I mean, yes.
What more should there be?
I feel like it just, it didn't tie up all the right details. Like, what happens to Huck?
Who cares?
What happens to, I mean, it's true. What does
Huck doesn't matter what happens to Jim, right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But if Huck is actually his child, shouldn't there be at least like something about that? Anyway, I'm complaining more about this than I actually like think is a problem. Like it was fine. But if it was to be like really good, a like 5-star novel would have put all the pieces together a little bit better, is what I'm saying. It was still okay. That's my opinion.
I agree that it was just okay, honestly. But I wouldn't let Jimmy get a chance.
Oh, yeah. I thought it was pretty good. I didn't 5-star it. It's definitely better than The Trees, just because it had a second half. But I thought, you know, the concept is not like, oh, crazy. It's just like, yeah, I wonder what it's like. I was okay with him adding in all the crazy shit because, like, there are parts of Huck Finn where Jim fucking disappears and he just shows... Jim is not even a two-dimensional character in Huck Finn. He's just like... I'm just there for fucking nothing, really. I don't even know. Just for, like, Huck to have someone to talk to sometimes. And the idea of him, like, having to pretend was like, yeah, I guess I'd never thought that much about that, but yeah, it would make sense. Like, you gotta act a certain way or they'll just fucking kill you for no reason. You know, get on some zany adventures in the... It's any book where, you know, you take the story everyone knows from someone else's perspective, there's always gonna be some, like, fill in the blanks. Like, oh, they weren't in that scene. What were they doing? Like, I mean, in the Huck Finn version, you don't even think about where Jim was. No one, you don't care. Like, oh, Huck's on a zany adventure. Oh, Jim disappeared. He's just going to, like, poop in the river until Huck finds him again.
Well, that to be fair, that book is called The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and not The Adventures of Huckleberry Finn and Jim.
Yeah. So, I mean, this one is James. So, like, what was he doing in those? Like, I guess he was doing a lot. So, you know, it was extreme, certainly, and it was not subtle in its, like, message, nor did it, I guess, need to be. It was...
Neither was slavery, Jimmy.
What?
Neither was slavery.
Not subtle. Certainly not subtle.
Not subtle.
Few people would call it subtle. Even people that like it would say it is. Would not say it is subtle.
No, they would have... It's pretty clear. It's pretty black and white. You know, what are the parameters?
But I thought it was pretty good. It's not by any means like the favorite thing I've ever read recently even, but... It was good. It was better than Orbital, but there are still 11 other books in this fucking list.
Oh yeah, let's say the Booker talk for a second. Yeah. So, I thought the book was okay. I gave it 4 stars, but I actually have been thinking lately I should demote it to 3 because it was like, it suffers from a couple problems for me. compare it to some of the other things you've read. Like, the thing that came to mind most was Fool. And that's not an insult to anybody. But in Fool, you take the character of the fool in King Lear, who is a jester and doesn't matter, and give him a whole story. That's kind of similar to Huckleberry Finn, because Jim really is not a full-fledged character in Huckleberry Finn, and you give him his own story. And in Fool, it did the thing of weaving him back in, and it actually kind of made King Lear comprehensible. Whereas in this, it made Jim, like, not just smarter than he was in the book, but he's a fucking scholar. Like, not to say he couldn't have been, but it was a kind of strange, you know, extreme choice for comparison purposes, I guess. And then he's Huck's dad, and then he's...
I will say that I gave it 4 stars when I thought that the Huck's dad thing was a metaphor.
It just kind of went over the top in that sense, which I said earlier, I think is Percival Everett's thing. Then the book suffers from the same problem that, like, Rogue One suffered from, where, like, any character introduced, you know, has to die. So they can't get too used to them. They're just there to expand the plot for a second. But Jim's intelligence kind of never mattered. His constant switching of character mattered, but his understanding Voltaire and John Locke wasn't important. There was never any, like, MacGyver moment where he knew something from a book. It was just that he was conflicted, or he was able to point out how the Constitution of the United States was conflicted, which I guess is important.
It could be like his intelligence in the end when he was like killing the overseer and when he was kidnapping the judge, like more so than just like being threatened with death. They were mostly confused that he could talk well. It was like, what the fuck is going on? Like, it was so off-putting to them that they didn't understand what was even happening. They're like, they can think?
You haven't said Massa once.
Yeah. I mean, that is kind of the extent of it, though.
The other thing, I mean, not everything has to, I guess, Matt, not everything is Chekhov's genius, but it also reminded me of The Testaments by Margaret Atwood.
Oh, yeah.
And as, the longer we've gone since that book came out, I've come to think that The Testaments was actually not that great. That The Testaments was fun. The Testaments was a fun book, but not a serious book. It was kind of like the Hollywood action version of The Handmaid's Tale.
Like Ready Player One.
Well, just like, you know, The Handmaid's Tale, which I don't even know if that episode's still out there anywhere, but like we did that at some point. That's a story and was meant to point out things about the world and was harrowing. And then all of a sudden they make the action revenge sequel 30 years later. It was like Rambo Second Blood. You know, it was just like another... Like,
that was also the end of Fool.
Yes, but Fool never pretended to be serious.
Until the end.
What the fuck is that guy's name? Christopher Moore?
I don't even remember the end.
The end, he like turns into like a badass who like gets his revenge.
He sorts it all out. Yeah, he fucks
like,
everybody.
It's no longer even a comedy. It's just like, I'm going to get my revenge and I'm going to do action stuff and oh, I'm super serious and I'm doing the good stuff and then goo-hoo-hoo. But what the fuck?
But I think throughout that whole thing, the theme of or the mood of Fool was ooh-hoo-hoo. It was always silly clown.
For like 9/10 of it.
But even at the end, he is like, I have shit to do, but I'm a clown. That's what I got to do. Whereas the Testaments, all of a sudden they're like, we're taking down Gilead. And you're like, oh, and it felt fun when you read it. You're like, this is badass. This is fun. But afterwards, the Testaments will never be the literary work that The Handmaid's Tale was. The Testaments was cheap and... like the Hollywood sequel, the bigger budget, more explosions. In this case, probably only not more titties. This felt like that, where it was at the end, where Jim goes on the revenge, killing the overseer, kidnapping the judge, shooting the breeder guy and freeing his slaves, it just felt like a lot of, it felt like fan fiction is what it felt like. You know, where fans are like, wouldn't it be fucking cool if Jim kicked all sorts of fucking ass at the end? And you're like, yeah, that would be cool. And it is. I just don't think it makes for great literature. I don't know if that makes sense. If I explain that well, but it was a really fun book. Is it a great book? No, I don't think it is. I think it was a lot of fun. And I would add that the political or social things it's saying have kind of been said a lot in the last 4 years about America's history and America's failure at points in its history, certainly, if not present, to live up to its ideals. The book doesn't bring anything new. I don't think you could have gone through 2020 and that summer and not come away with like, man, we got to really, you know, maybe shit's not perfect in this country. Like,
well, not new. I mean, obviously all of these issues have been talked about many, many times before, but it does talk about it in at least, I want to say it does feel new at least a little bit, because it's the idea of having the book Huck Finn actually be about Jim is a unique perspective and is a different way to say it. Although really, yes, all these things have been said before. So if we get into like, is it going to win the Booker? I would say, well, it's not the most amazing literary book that's ever been written. I think it has a chance.
Oh, I would be shocked if it doesn't at least make the short list.
Yeah. Like, I think it definitely has a chance, because it is about a very important social issue. And the fact that it's, you know, Huck Finn from Jim's perspective, that is the experimental, like, version, the experimental, like, aspect of the book. And he's been nominated a couple times. So I would say he's a... If I had to guess, if I was to bet money, and I have not bet any money because I don't do that, but because I'm not a degenerate gambler that gambles on books, I would bet that this at least makes the short list.
I think there's a good chance. I mean, how do you really say anything new about slavery was bad? Like, yeah, it's hard to really branch out. It's been said so many times. There are still a lot of people. No one we know, hopefully.
Well, just Nate.
That think, you know, like, what the fuck are they whining about? You know, black people can't do stuff. They're not good at it. You know, they're lucky we enslaved them and brought them here and civilized them. They're people that fucking believe that.
Are there really that many fucking people saying that?
They're not that many, but there are some. It's not zero. But also, even beyond that, I think even people that realize, like, yeah, like, that was really fucked up, and, you know, the concept that a slave, like an active slave, could have been well-read, I mean, is still, I mean, it is hard because they were, you know, killed if they were allowed to, if they read anything. That is...
Frederick Douglass had to escape slavery to then get an education and then become brilliant.
It is hard to imagine, but I guess the concept that, you know, slaves could be intelligent, free-thinking, well-spoken individuals. Even people who thought that it was fucked up would be like, yeah, I guess that is a new concept. It's kind of like, do you ever see 12 Years a Slave?
Sure.
In that, like, when the slaves spoke, it was kind of this weird, like, almost Shakespearean cadence to it. It was like...
And that was that's based on a narrative by an actual... slave or man who had, you know, been enslaved illegally or whatever.
Oh yeah, it was like escaped. A true story thing, right?
Yeah, Solomon Northup, and then he just vanished in the annals of history. Yeah,
so, yeah, it's hard to say what's like. Does it bring anything new to the conversation? I don't know. Does it do new things need to be brought to the conversation? But what? I think it is. It's certainly a concept, and you know, I don't know. I don't remember if I liked Huck Finn. I thought it was. I probably thought it was fine. It wasn't like, wow, I'm glad I read this.
It gets dumb at the end. It like the first half is kind of interesting, and then it got stupid, is what I think we said.
Because Huck was stupid.
Like slavery. Unlike. Yeah.
Bold.
Bold. Yeah, I'm going to say it. something you say. Come at me. something you just said, though, reminded me of this quote, which I find really beautiful. Do you know who Stephen Jay Gould was? Do you know that name? Nate might.
Is he a biologist?
He's a science writer. I don't know what his like science credentials were, but I know he was a great science writer for like Science or Scientific American or whatever. And he has this great quote. He says, "I am somehow less interested in the weight and convolutions of Einstein's brain than in the near certainty that people of equal talent have lived and died in cotton fields and sweatshops."
Yeah.
And a really sobering comment. And that's one of the things to keep in mind with any of like these narratives about slavery and these and stories. And you know, it was something at the something you just said there. I can't remember now because I drank that 60% alcohol beer made with fucking Cheetos.
Everything but Cheetos.
I can't remember. Yeah, that was the only thing not in it was Cheetos.
Cheesecake.
Oh, cheesecake was in there. There are like three different types of cheesecake. You know, just, you know, obviously the institution of slavery is an abomination and, or was an abomination. And I mean, I don't know. I'm not, I just feel like very few people need to be told that slavery was bad. The handful of people that are like, the slaves were happy, they're fucking unreachable.
Yeah.
They're just, there's nothing you could say to those people. They're really, if they could believe that, then there's no hope for them. And this book, in that sense, I don't think brings anything new. I think the book did a good job, though, of showing all the various ways, insidious and subtle as some were, of how black people were stripped of their humanity in slavery. You know, like there's the guy in the engine room who just is a slave to his task. There are the breeder men who are fed out of a dog bowl. There, you know, and they say, why are you chained like that? It's like, because it makes the master happy and thinking we're animals. You know, like it was very clear, very direct. I don't think you're going to convince any of the, you know, hateful people in the world. But for all the schools that teach Huckleberry Finn, they should teach this with it. I'll say that.
I don't think any schools do Huckleberry Finn anymore.
Not since 2020. They got rid of that right away. No, no. Nope. Tom Sawyer was the hero anyway. We're Rush fans at the school. Tom Sawyer all the way. I think the moment for this book has kind of passed in terms of cultural and political weight.
Okay, I see what you're saying. I also think it's timeless. I actually don't think it's completely passed. I do agree what you're saying is that anyone who doesn't know this shit is unreachable. Totally true. But yet, I don't think it's passed. I think people still need to hear this.
I mean, it comes and goes in terms of like heights, but it's never gone.
Well, no, but I think the moment to put out a book about America and its unfair treatment of black people was 3 years ago. Like that was when everybody was tripping over themselves to be like,
that was a very big time for that, for sure. I'm inappropriate to do it now either.
It's not inappropriate. Certainly not. I enjoyed the book. I'm just saying it's unlikely to win. I wonder if there's fatigue.
It's not the issue to win this year.
Yeah. Are people kind of like, that was last year's thing, you know?
We just did apartheid, you know?
Yeah. Like, what about Palestine? Like, I feel like
lesbians this year.
Yeah. That's really, I guess, what I'm trying to get to. I thought the book was great. I loved it. It was very fun. I don't think said anything that I had not heard before, but maybe, and this should be said, I guess, isn't implied whenever we say something. Obviously, not everyone has heard the same things we've heard, but like maybe some people would hear it better this way. I thought it was just a fun revenge book. I don't think it's going to win the prize.
Do you think there is something gained
if you have read Huck Finn, is this better than if you haven't read Huck Finn?
I don't wait. If I have like, read Huck Finn,
like for someone who
do
hasn't,
you mean do you some, need to read Huck Finn first?
Yeah, does that make it better or worse if you have or haven't?
Book? Huck Finn sucks. Huck Finn is a fucking shit book. It's boring. It's confusing. Like because the writing is so.
It was an important book when it came out, but that doesn't mean it's like good to read now. But yet, I do actually kind of think. You do, if you haven't never read Huck Finn, this book, or James, is just, well, like, what is it? Like, I would say you do need to read Huck Finn to understand what Percival Everett is trying to do.
Yeah, I get that.
You're going to miss stuff. And it just, like, also his cleverness is going to be lost on you if you haven't read Huck Finn.
You can't really get what he did, you can't get why this book exists. If you haven't read how meaningless Jim was in the original.
Yeah. Though, if you've read the spark notes for Huck Finn, you're set.
Yeah, maybe.
You can just read like part of Huck Finn. You can read the first third of it and say, I get the gist.
Or what if you've just read the N-word 159 times?
It's 219.
219 times.
But I don't follow Trump on Truth Social. How am I going to read it then? That's wrong. Too easy. Too easy of a joke. Huck Finn, for better or for worse, is one of those books that is an American learned person you're supposed to know.
It's part of the canon.
You should read it just so you could fucking say you read it. there are books in that category, I think we could agree. Like you're just supposed to read that. Because you can't let the snobs beat you.
And if you're over 18, you probably had to read it in school anyway.
And you should. Teachers try to sodomize you with those books. But this, you need to know the gist of Huck Finn. If you read the Wikipedia article, you could get the gist of this. Should this win the Booker? We've read two so far. It's better than the other one. Will it win? Who knows?
Not a clue.
I think it has a chance.
It has a chance.
Even though it was my favorite book.
You're totally right. I think it has a chance.
It'll shortlist.
On our Drunk Eyes rubric, it scores very, very high in the social political quadrant. Trirent? I think we only had three categories.
Triad?
It's not Triforce? A Chinese mafia, no. And then it... it's creative in the sense that it's a classic book told from a new perspective.
It did have quotation marks in it, though.
Ooh, that's
going to win.
We have to test that. I think that's probably only a factor of the last, 10, 15 years.
That's a lot.
I want to say 3 to 5 years.
Well, yeah, maybe even shorter. But the book has been since 1969, so nice. It's hard to know. Will it win? It's the front runner of two so far. Of these two, this one will win. If Orbital beats this, I'll be so fucking angry.
I'll just give up at that point. I don't know what anyone wants at that point.
There's no way. There's not a chance. No.
Unless they're fatigued with this issue. That's the thing.
We'll have to read the other 11 to see what the other ones even are. I don't know fucking anything about the other ones. So.
I started reading the third one today. I started reading a third and a fourth, and the third one I was like... Oh, God, it's like poems and shit, and I just closed it.
It's like all the parts of Lord of the Ring that I skipped.
It's like, this is just a very long dedication, right? Like, oh, no. Closed it. And then the next one is like, oh, druggies in Ireland. This is like Train Spotting, but, you know, more leprechauns. And then I was like, all right, I can handle this, and I read a few pages.
Which we're probably going to do pretty soon.
Anyway, we are, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway, tell us what you thought. Send us an email to drunkguysbookclub@gmail.com.
Follow us on Twitter at drunkguysbc.
Or go to Facebook and Instagram at drunkguysbookclub.
And you can support the podcast. One person who fell asleep listening to us at this point, because no one else is, at patreon.com/drunkguysbookclub.
And you can wake up and go to goodreads.com.
And check out the Hopped Up Network, a network of independent beer podcasters. And thanks for listening.